John, chapter 11. Book of John, chapter 11. What is recorded in the 11th chapter is truly remarkable, very magnificent and wide-ranging. There's a lot of truths presented, a lot of different ways that you can go with John chapter 11. In it, there is the natural course of life. You have sickness, you have death, you have a grave. In this chapter, there's that which appears very, very grim and hopeless. There's sadness, there's heartache, there's mourning, but there's also comfort, euphoria, assurance, peace, and victory. In this chapter, we have unveiled the person of Christ, the love of Christ, the tenderness of the Lord. We see His miraculous power. John 11 records one of the greatest hopeless cases in all the Word of God. In this chapter, we see hope restored to those who were tired and weary in soul. Again, the chapter is a gallery of spiritual truth filled with invaluable instruction and guidance and encouragement. Again, it's what's here is truly momentous. It ought to be the meditation of God's people everywhere. To save time, we just want to read one verse, verse 28. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." Martha, the sister of Mary, said to her, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." What wonderful, wonderful words. The Master is come and calleth for thee. There is love there. There is concern. There is comfort. There is hope. There is assurance that we can find in those words, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." There's spiritual nourishment to be found in those words. Those are words that ought to revitalize us. Those are words that ought to revive us. Words that ought to cause exhilaration and great anticipation ought to fill our hearts when we hear those words, "The Master is come and calleth for thee." Those are words that ought to fill us with fervor, zeal. Words, there's a fountain of rejoicing in those words. There's a fountain of thanksgiving and praise in those words. These words prove to be a breath of life to Mary. And they are words that are very relevant to us today. They're words that are relevant to every circumstance that comes our way. The Master is come and calleth for thee. Those are words that we need to hear every day. Those are words that we ought to long to hear every day. Those are words that we ought never to grow tired of hearing. The Master is come and calleth for thee. And that'll be the title of the message, "The Master is come and calleth for thee. We want to view this chapter in different scenes or settings, as you would a play or a story, though this is not a play. It's not a mere story. It's a real historical fact. The main characters in this account, other than Christ, he's really the main character. But other than Christ, the main characters are a man by the name of Lazarus and his two sisters, Martha and Mary. So again, we want to look at this in scenes. We'll look at it in seven different scenes. The opening scene, Lazarus is sick. There are five references to this fact of the sickness of Lazarus. We read in verse 1, a certain man was sick named Lazarus. We read in verse 2, Lazarus was sick. We read in verse 3, he whom thou lovest is sick. Jesus, in reference to his sickness, in verse 4, referred to this sickness. And in verse 6, we read, he was sick. So five times, reference is made to the fact that Lazarus is sick. So we get the idea, Lazarus is sick. In this scene, we see his sisters, Martha and Mary. And they sent word to Christ concerning the sickness of their brother. Why did they do that? Because they knew and had personally experienced that Jesus was their most tender, caring, affectionate, and able friend. So they sent word to Jesus. They did not ask him to come to Bethany. They did not even ask him to heal their brother. Though as you read on, it's obvious that they had hoped for this, and they even expected Jesus to come to Bethany and to heal Lazarus. But in their message to Christ, they appealed to and no doubt found assurance in the love of Christ. They said, he whom thou lovest is sick. So they are appealing to the love of Jesus Christ. John makes note and makes a statement in verse 5. He said, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. We read in verse 6, that after Jesus received word that Lazarus was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. This is a picture of the Lord arranging circumstances. After 2 days, verse 7, Jesus said to his disciples, let us go into Judea. This brought the immediate protest of the disciples, verse 8 and verse 9. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, which has reference back to John 10, verse 31. And goest thou thither again? And then Jesus responds in verses 9 and 10. And in his response, he teaches them. And that's the end of scene 1. In scene 2, following the teaching of his disciples, he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth. But I go, he's telling them why he wants to go to Judea. But I go that I may awake him out of sleep. From verses 12 and 13, we see that the disciples misunderstood what Christ was telling them. He was telling them of the death of Christ. They thought he was saying, Lazarus is taking a nap and I'm going to go wake him out of his nap. And then in verse 14, then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. So the scene has shifted from sickness to death. Lazarus is dead. No doubt those were shocking words to these apostles. They were distressing and very sorrowful words to these disciples. And Jesus could see this because in verse 15 he basically said to them, this is for good. So he obviously saw the trouble and the anguish and the shock that was on their faces. We've all experienced that. So-and-so is dead. So-and-so has died. And Jesus said, this is good. This is what is best for you. He then said in verse 15, let us go unto him. The response of Thomas manifests that he was certain that if Christ went to Judea, that he would be killed. But it also reveals that Thomas was willing to go and be killed with Jesus. And that scene closes, bringing us to the third scene in verse 17. There is the arrival of Christ outside of Bethany. And we are told that by that time, Lazarus had been in the grave 4 days already. So the scene has now moved to Bethany, to a house in Bethany. I believe the house of Mary and Martha. Verse 19, and many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary. And verse 31 says, the Jews then which were with her in the house. So we are now at a house in Bethany. In that house there is an overwhelming heaviness. There is hurt. Lazarus is dead. There is sorrow. There is grief. And in that house were the friends of Martha and Mary, and they are sharing in their hurt and in their grief. They are trying to help bear their burden, seeking to be of some comfort to them. It was during this time, verse 20, that Mary heard that Jesus was on his way and was nearby. Notice those words in verse 20. Jesus was coming. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming. What wonderful words. Jesus was coming. And she went and met him. But we're told that Mary sat still in the house. I don't believe at this time that Mary knew that Jesus was coming. Martha heard, and she immediately just gets up and leaves. So the scene closes with Martha leaving the house, and Mary is sitting in that house. That brings us to scene four, which now shifts to Martha before Jesus. We have that in verses 21 through verse 27. Her very first words to Christ were the expression of an array of emotion. You know, Martha is almost the female version of Peter. They're a lot alike. That's not a criticism. That's just a statement of fact. That's just their personalities. But her very first words to Christ were the expression of great emotion. "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." Most look at those words as words of rebuke. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I don't know that that's necessarily fair. I do see much emotion in those words. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died." Now, those words express the fact that she had expected Jesus Christ to come. They didn't ask him to come. Not that he would have came had they asked. But they obviously expected him to come. They not only expected him to come, they expected him to do something when he came. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died." In other words, you would have done something to prevent this from happening. You know, that's a very dangerous place for our minds to go. A tragedy happens, and you can begin to think, especially we that believe the sovereignty of God. Well, you know, God could have stopped this. He could have stopped this. He could have stopped this. This would have never happened. And that's true. But that's usually not a healthy way to think, because usually the result of that is blame. So we need to be careful. That's a different message. In these words, I see a sense of disappointment. She's basically saying, "Lord, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're 4 days late. You're 4 days late." There's hurt in these words. She's hurting. "If you'd have been here, my brother would not have died." There's heartache. There's grief. We see it especially in "my brother." There's a lot of emotion in those two words, "my brother." My brother. It's not just, "Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died." But "my brother would not have died." So she's very connected to the situation. There is perhaps some blame here. "Had you been here 4 days ago, my brother would not have had to die." But for sure, these are the words of one, and I believe this is the key, these are the words of one who did not understand why this had to happen. And she is trying to make sense of it all. We do that. We do that. That's human nature. Why? Why did this happen? And then we began to try to make sense of it all. And I believe this is what Martha was doing. Now, in this scene, Jesus and Martha are seen in a conversation. And during that course of the conversation, Jesus revealed something about himself to her. He said, "Martha, I am the resurrection and the life." What he's saying is, "Martha, I am exactly what is needed for this circumstance. Lazarus is dead, and I am the resurrection, and I am the life. In other words, Martha, I'm exactly what's needed. We need to hear that. We need to hear that in all of our circumstances. We need to hear the Lord saying, I am exactly what you need in this circumstance. That's always true. He is saying, Martha, I am who I am, no matter what the circumstance. Lazarus' death has not changed the fact that I am the resurrection and the life. I believe something else he was telling Martha, because Martha said, Lord, if you had been here, in other words, Lord, you're 4 days late. He's telling her, Martha, listen to me. I'm not late. I'm right on time. That's always so. As the song says, isn't it great when he's 4 days late? He's right on time. He's only 4 days late in our minds. He's never late. He's always right on time. The scene ends with Martha declaring in verse 27, Yea, Lord. I love those two words. Yea, Lord. Yes, Lord. Oh, those are two words that we need in our vocabulary. Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. Yea, Lord. I believe. What did she believe? Well, she believed something that had to do with Christ. She said, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God. She believed two things, or she expresses her belief in two things here. She believed that he was God. Thou art the Son of God. I believe that you're God. She also believed that he was the promised one of this book. Thou art the Christ, which should come into the world. This scene, verse 28, closes, and when she had so said, she went her way. And I believe that she went her way with the peace of God flooding her soul. That brings us to scene 5. She returns to the house where Mary was. Remember back in verse 20, when Martha left the house, that Mary sat still in the house. So we're back in the house now. And there's Mary. Still probably sitting in the same place. We need to see her there. We've all been there. We that have lived long enough. She is there in heaviness of heart. She's hurting. She has sorrow. She has grief. She is there probably reflecting on her memories of her brother. I'm sure she's trying to come to grips with what life is going to be like without him. I mean, this is the process when you experience the death of a loved one. There is that grief. You begin to reflect on memories. Somewhere along the line, you have to come to grips with what's life going to be like without them. And I'm sure all of these things were going through the mind of Mary. I'm also very certain that Satan was there, whispering in her ear, if Christ cared anything about you at all, he would have been here. Martha arrives in verse 28, and she has a peace within her. And we read that she called Mary, her sister, secretly. This could mean a few different things. She could have stood on one side of the room and went, psst, called Mary over to her. Or she could have just went up to her and whispered in her ear. Doesn't really matter. But what she said to Mary, only Mary heard. No one else heard it. She calleth Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, the Master is come, and he's calling for you. What she's saying is, Mary, the owner, the ruler of all, he's come. That had to be music in the ears of Mary. The Master is come. Mary, the one who is greater than everything that you are feeling at this very moment, Mary, he's come. He's come. He's come. Mary, the Master is come. The one who is greater than this situation. The one who is greater than this problem, than this trial, than this difficulty. The one who is greater than this particular storm. Mary, he's come. The Master is come. Mary, the one who is greater than all your concerns. The one who is greater than all of your burdens. The one who is greater than all of your needs. He's come. The Master is come. The one who is greater than all the pressures that you're feeling at this very moment. The one who is greater than all the distresses that you're feeling at this moment. He's come. She is saying, Mary, our God. Remember what she believed. She believed that he was God. She believed that he was the promised one. She is saying, Mary, the Master is come. Mary, God has come. The promised one, he has come. He has come. The Master has come. She's saying, Mary, listen to me. The one who is the light for this particular darkness, he's come. Mary, the one who has the life and the rejuvenation that is needed for this particular hour, he has come. The Master is come. She is saying, Mary, the one who can dry your tears, the one who can heal your wounds, the one who can soothe all of your hurts and mend your heart, the one who can lift all of these sorrows, the one who can bring cheer and hope and strength and joy and courage and assurance and peace and rest and victory. Mary, the one who can fill your heart with a song. He has come. She is saying, Mary, the one who can fill all this emptiness, he's come. All of these people that have gathered at the house, they're trying to comfort you, Mary, but the one who can, he's come. He's come. But there's more. The Master is come, and Mary, he's calling for you, and calleth for thee. She's now telling Mary of a call of love. It's as if she said, Mary, the Master has not only come, But he has an interest in you. He's calling you. He wants you to come. That shows he has an interest in her. You see, in times of sorrow, our human nature has a tendency to think, he's not interested in me. The Master has come and calleth for thee. He's interested. He's interested. She is saying, Mary, he wants to see you. The Master has come and he calleth for thee. He wants to see you, Mary. He doesn't just want to see you, Mary, but he wants to speak to you. He has something to say to you. And Mary, he wants to do for you. The Master is come and calleth for thee. We need to remember those words in all of our circumstances. The Master is come. Oh, what hope. And that he calls for us shows that he's interested. He wants to see me. He wants to talk to me. He wants to do. Mary, the Master has come and calleth for you. He wants to share with you, Mary, his grace and his mercy and his love and his goodness. These words thrilled Mary. The Master has come and calleth for thee. The scene closes in verse 29. As soon as she heard that, the Master has come and calleth for thee. She knew who the Master was, by the way. That's a different message. Martha didn't have to say the Master, and Mary say, who do you mean by that? Well, Jesus. Okay. No, as soon as she said the Master, she knew. She knew that it was Jesus. And she arose quickly and came to him. So the scene closes with Mary abruptly leaving the house. And coming to verse 31, the ones who had gathered at the house to comfort Martha and Mary, they see Mary hastily leaving and they assume that she is going to the grave to weep there. So they follow her. And that's where that scene closes. Bringing us to scene number 6. In verse 30, Jesus is waiting for Mary. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town. It was in the place where Martha met him. He's still there. Why? Why is he still there? Because he knows she's coming. He knows she's coming. And in verse 32, Mary arrives where Jesus is. Then when Mary was come to where Jesus was. Oh, we need to do that. When Mary was come to where Jesus was. And then notice, and saw him. And saw him. She didn't see him sitting in the house. But when she came to where Jesus was, she saw him. She saw the one that she so loved. She saw the one that so loved her. And we read that she fell down at his feet there in verse 32. Now, if you know anything about Mary, Luke chapter 10, she's been there before. This isn't the first time Mary's at the feet of Jesus. When she was there before, what did she do? She worshiped. She's worshiped there before. She was taught. She's been taught there before. She has been blessed there before. She has received from him there before. So she comes and she falls at his feet. Now she says the same thing, word for word, that Martha said. But she said it from a different place. And I believe that makes all the difference. That makes all the difference. Mary fell at the feet of Christ. And she is weeping. Verse 32, again, she said, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. Verse 33, when Jesus therefore saw her weeping. So, Mary's at the feet of Jesus and she's crying as she speaks these words. The Jews also were weeping, those who came with her from the house. They also were weeping. As Mary is weeping, in verse 33, he groaned in the Spirit. He groaned in the Spirit. He made a noise, and he was troubled. And with that, he said something to Mary. What he said to Mary was the same thing he said to Martha. Mary, I'm not late. Mary, but what he's saying here also, when he groaned in spirit and was troubled, was, Mary, I have not lost touch with you. I'm still touched with the feeling of your infirmity. I'm still identify with your hurt. Mary, I know. You know, Jesus is the only one who can truly say that. I know. I know. Oh, we can say, I try never to say this. Don't mean I don't, but I try not to. I know exactly how you feel. I don't know how you feel. Well, I went through the same thing. That doesn't mean you have the same feelings. That's quite an assumption. Well, that would make us all exactly alike. But Jesus can say, I know. And when he groaned in spirit, that's what he was saying. Mary, I know. Mary, I understand. He is saying, Mary, I care. I care. Again, we sing the song, Does Jesus Care? Oh, yeah, the chorus. Oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. My heart, when my heart, his heart is touched with my grief, when the days are weary and the long nights dreary, I know my Savior cares. That's a good thing to know. Mary was reminded at this time that Jesus cares. Next, we see Jesus asking, verse 34, where have you buried him? Where have you laid him? They, the Jews, spoke, come and see. We read in verse 35, Jesus wept, still saying without saying it, I care. I know. I understand. I'm interested. And in verse 38, we see him again groaning in himself. And the scene closes in verse 38. He cometh to the grave. And that brings us to scene 7, the last scene. Jesus is at the grave. It's not like our graves today. It's a cave. And at the mouth of this cave, a stone, a big rock, lay upon it. In verse 39, Jesus said, take away the stone. Move the stone. I believe he's not talking to Martha and Mary. He's talking to the Jews who had come. It would take several to move that stone. Martha immediately responded, "Lord, you know, if you take away that stone, the vile odor of corruption will drift out of that cave. Because, Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. What she's saying is, Lord, you don't want to move that stone. Because Lazarus is 4 days dead. Not to be crude, but Lazarus is stinking dead. He's been dead for 4 days. And Jesus responds in verse 40, "Said I not unto thee that thou, if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God?" What he's saying is, "Martha, I'm able. Don't you worry about the stink. I'm able. Martha, I'm not limited. I'm not limited by the fact that he has been dead for 4 days. Martha, I'm not limited by the fact that corruption has set in." Verse 41, "Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid or buried." And next we see verse 41 and verse 42. Jesus is standing there and his eyes are toward heaven and he's praying. He's praying to the Father. And then in verse 43, it says that he cried with a loud voice. A loud voice. "Lazarus! Come forth!" You have to remember, in that day, they did not embalm internally like we do today. They embalmed externally. They would bathe the body down with spices and oils. They would then take strips of cloth and wind it around the body. And they would cover the face with a napkin. And with those spices and with those strips of cloth, in short time those strips of cloth would become like plaster, like a cast. And we have to picture Lazarus that way. Lazarus was fully bound. He had a napkin over his face. But he heard Jesus say, "Lazarus!" Why did Jesus call him by name? Because if Jesus just said, "Come forth," all the dead bodies would have come forth. "Lazarus!" And life entered into his body. Verse 44, "And he that was dead," he's no longer dead, "came forth." How did he come forth? He's bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and on his face was bound with a napkin. Lazarus didn't just walk out of the grave. I don't know how he got out. But he couldn't move. He was bound. He had a cast around him. But there he is. He's come forth. out of the grave. Jesus then said, again, I believe to the Jews, I don't believe he would have told Martha and Mary this, but he said, loose him. Let him go. That is, remove those grave clothes. Remove all that plaster. That not only is a good picture of the salvation of a sinner, but it is also a picture of you and I. Sometimes we get in situations in our life and it's like we're I say plastered, that word has the wrong connotation. But it's like we're bound with plaster. What's the answer? Here it is. Jesus. He's the answer. Whatever your circumstances are, whatever your needs are, He can set you free. He's the answer. We don't have to define the needs. We don't have to define the circumstances. He's the answer. Now, in closing, the Master has come and calleth for thee. Oh, what thrilling words. How many times in our life we have heard those words? The Master has come, and He's calling for you. And I remind you, the Master has come, and He's not late. We get a tendency, you know, we don't feel the presence of God right away. You know, some people have said, well, if you don't feel the presence of God, it's because you're not right with God. I don't believe that's necessarily true. I believe God designs it that way at times, where you just don't feel His presence. It's a test of our faith. But then we hear those words, the Master's come. And I remind you, when He does, He's not late. He never is. He's always right on time. The Master is come and He calleth for thee. I remind you that He's not lost touch. He's not lost touch. We may lose touch with Him, but He doesn't lose touch with us. He calleth for you. And may I say also, He's not limited. The Master is come and calleth for thee. And I believe Jesus said to Martha and Mary, combined, without really saying it, I'm not late. I'm right on time. I care. I'm interested. And I'm not limited by the fact that He's been in the grave for 4 days. I'm not limited by the stone in front of the cave. I'm not limited. The Master is come and calleth for thee. We need to be like Mary. As soon as we hear those words, arise. She didn't say goodbye to anyone. She arose. She was on the move. We need to arise, and we need to come to Him. And we need to fall at His feet. And we need to pour our heart out to Him. Realizing again, He's not late. He's not lost touch. He's not limited by our circumstances, whatever they are. And then expect the miraculous. Because that's what happened. The miraculous took place. John chapter 11 is wonderful. There's so much to encourage our hearts in John chapter 11. There's also some things that would rebuke us. Martha's response to the Lord, you don't want to move that stone. Don't instruct God. We have that tendency. You know why we do that? Because we think we know more about our situation than God does. Just listen to what the Lord says. And say what Martha said originally, "Yea, Lord." You see, that should have been Martha's response when he said, "Take away the stone." She should have said, "Yes, Lord." But that's not how we are. So there's also some rebuke. But oh, what encouragement we find here in John chapter 11. The Master has come and calleth for thee. I believe in every circumstance of my life that the Master calls me. Do I always hear it? No. Do I always respond in a positive way? No. But I believe he's always saying, he's always calling us. And all we need to hear, that call of love, and come. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.